Blog Talk
here?
Radio.
Yes, hello.
Yeah, the show's starting right now, so they can't hear us now, but...
Hi, how are you? This is Nasir Ahmed.
Hi, Nasir. This is Liz. Nice to
Liz,
meet you.
Liz, pleasure to talk to you finally.
Yes, yes. Well, hello, and welcome to True Crimes Podcasts. Today I have a very interesting guest, Nasir Ahmed. And today we're going to be talking about the murder of Meredith Kircher and the whole case and how things have evolved, and also the upcoming trials of Amanda Knox. She has another trial coming up in September, a couple of weeks, and Raphael in May. So how are you, Nasir?
I'm very well, thank you. And how are you?
Good. Thank you for being on the show.
You're very welcome. I'm pleased to be able to speak to your audience about the show. I just wanted to introduce myself briefly that, as you know, but for your audience, I have commented extensively on this case as Ergon on Perugia Murder Files, and also as Man from Atlan on earlier chat and social media.
Yes, I should mention that. You have a few different identities, as we all do online. But you are well known for all of them. I guess, yeah. So Ergon and Man from Atlan. Yeah, so now, when did you first start getting really involved in this case? And what have you done as for this case? I know you've done a lot. So just from the beginning, like, what have you been working on? Or did you start off just with the website, the PMF, correct? PMF.org or PMF.net, I mean.
Sure. Actually, this relates to my interest in criminal psychology, and it's something that I've been very involved with and interested since I first read a book on criminal psychology when I was in high school. And prior to that, the question of mental illness and something, just schizophrenia and psychosis and other forms of mental illness has always been at the back of my mind and my esoteric pursuit. But as far as Amanda Knox and the Meredith Kircher murder case, then it started for me just around about 2007, actually, during the actual time of the trial. The murder itself. And it was in the news at a particular point in time. And I was aware of it for quite a while, but I never got involved in it until I started seeing people, the two camps, if you wish, having it out on Huffington Post. And
Started on Huffington Post. I didn't realize that. It all began there, really?
Yes. Yes, it did, okay. In 2010, actually.
Okay.
So, you see, I've been on Huffington Post since 2008. And prior to that, on many other social media. And before that, it was always consistent. It was either anti-war, it was autism, homeopathy, alternative views, politics and medicine and everything else. And I was enjoying the whole thing about debate. For people to be able to debate differing points of view, rationally, hopefully, but I just enjoyed that. But what struck me was that it seemed to me that the people who were debating it, there were some who it seemed were part of a PR led effort, which really intrigued me, and so I. There I was reading up on the case, debating with what are now known as the FOA, the Friends of Amanda Knox. And so I'd been there for more than a year debating this case back and forth, and Peter Cannell of the True Justice site saw my comments and invited me to join True Justice. So that's when I actually first made my first posts in the True Justice for Meredith Kircher site around April of 2011. And then I joined PerugiaMurderFile.org and .net after that, around about mid-2011.
Interesting. So now PMF and True Justice Meredith Kircher, two major websites, along with the murder of Meredith Kircher.com. Now, all that one came later, right? It was PMF and True Justice sites first at the same time about? I was kind of curious, just getting an idea of how it all evolved.
Sure. What happened was that many people who were on the True Crime weblogs sites then migrated to the James Randi Educational Foundation website, where they're discussing it as well. They got some of them ended up on the Perugia Murder File sites, and also at the same time there was a parallel war going on the Meredith Kircher page on Wikipedia. So,
oh yes. Mm-hmm.
And so at the time, there were these parallel forces at work. On the one hand, people on Perugia Murder File decided that it was very important to educate the public on this case. Then, therefore, they gathered a whole team of volunteers to translate the documents from the ongoing investigations and trial from the Italian into English to present the views of the trials. The two sides, of course. I mean, it's not. I mean, sure, we had very strong views on the guilt, but that was based on the actual documents which we examined. But at a certain point, partisans, and we feel that this was a PR-led effort. Of Amanda Knox took over the Wikipedia page. And we found that due to interference from Jimmy Wales and his second-in-command, a lady called, who goes by the title Slim Virgin, they controlled the page, and we found it very difficult to present a more balanced, in our view, point of view of the trials and the case itself. So True Justice and Perugia Murder File were already well underway. They'd translated the Massey report, as you know. But then a group of editors, and I was involved in that process as well, decided, well, why don't we have an alternative wiki for presenting a more balanced point of view. And that is what we did. We set up the Murder of Meredith Kircher Wiki.
It's an excellent site, too. They're all excellent sites.
Yes, they are. Thank you. They all are, indeed.
So you're right, this war. Now, the PR, everybody knows, well aware of that now, pretty much, I think, with all their activities and online and social media. How do you think, is it pretty much waning off now? I know it was really strong, but now that they were acquitted back in March 27th, 2015, do you think that is sort of breaking away now and going away, or is it just never going to go away?
Well, it would have seemed that the acquittal of Amanda Knox and Raffaele Sullecito was that was it. Case closed, case over, and that's it. There was nothing else to do, to debate, or to, there was no point. And some people may have felt that, but what came by was just in investigating the background, and it's the background, the other stuff that was always at the back that intrigued us, and we just felt that it wasn't over yet. There still were surprises to come, and therefore it was important to maintain an online presence, if for no other reason than to educate people.
Yes, and there is so much to this case, and it is so confusing, and so you do need so many, you know, websites and books, you know, that have been published about this case. So now about this acquittal, there's a lot of controversy, you know, not only because people think it was wrong, but also because of the delay in the Italian courts with their reasoning report. Some say that it's, you know, breaking the law and there's problems going on there. Other people say, no, there's not a problem at all, that they can take their time because they don't need a report for an appeals trial or anything. What is your understanding about this, the lateness of it? Do you think it's indicative of a problem with the courts, or do you think it's just they're taking their time because they can?
Okay. Until the report comes out, then we will have no sure answer to that. It appears that the delay is more political than administrative. The fact is that the law is very clear that all reports must be filed within 90 days of the decision being rendered, but since there are no penalties then which ensue from not issuing a report, then a judge could go and do as they please. And we do have sources in the Italian judicial system, and it is their opinion that there's something more untoward. Just the way in which the decision was made, it appeared to have been preordained, and since it contradicts an earlier Supreme Court decision, then they're having some difficulty in squaring the circle, so to speak.
And when do you think we can expect that report? Do they give any indication?
Well, it has to come out at some time, and it works both ways. I for one, am not too worried about it, because it works like this. The longer the report is delayed, then it indicates, it proves, in fact, in my opinion, the illegality of this decision. It's like a straightforward report. If they only were supposed to judge the legal issues, they could not rule on the evidence. But the way the initial decision was rendered, that it looked like they had made an illegal decision based on the evidence, because Article 530.2 of the Code of Criminal Procedure states that it was a finding of insufficient evidence. If that is the case, then rightfully they should have returned it back to the appeals court to get it right this time around, and they did not. They just said, well, we can't resolve these differences. It looks like they're innocent. We are not sure. And they just acquitted. And that, in our opinion, was an illegal decision.
Right, because they're only supposed to rule on the law, not on
Correct.
The evidence. Okay. And but now, what do you... Menini, a prosecutor who's been maligned often by the
yes.
friends of Amanda Knox, now he is taking Amanda and Raphael back to court. he's in September with Amanda with the slander charges for what she said or how to about the police and how she was treated at the police station back in 2007. I'm just curious, what do you think will happen with that or how that's going to play out? Do you think that she'll get a possibility to get a prison sentence?
I very much doubt that. And I just have to be honest about that. Everything that I've seen before, based on past cases, I think that it is unlikely that she will go back to prison. There appears to have been a lot of political interference, not just from the Italian side, and that has to do with Raffaele Sollecito's family connections with the judiciary, and precisely his lawyer, Giulia Buongiorno, who has a lot of political connections, and somehow she was able to prevail in having that decision. So, and they also, there is evidence that the family knew about it beforehand, that that would be the outcome. But I've been looking at, and a lot of reporters like Andrea Vogt have been filing FOI requests to the State Department to see what involvement they had in this decision, and many of them have been blocked.
Right, right. I hope to talk to Andrea sometime in another show. So what do you think
she'll
probably
She's a lovely person.
Uh-huh. Oh, great. Great. I haven't talked to her yet, so hopefully.
Okay.
I look forward to it. So what do you think she'll probably just get a fine or something? Oh, go ahead.
Please. Could I just give some background on the whole thing about the upcoming defamation trial?
Oh, yes, please do.
Okay. First of all, we do know from previous cases that, yes, there are sometimes delays in issuing a motivation report, right? And so what I said was, okay, the longer the delay, then it will look like, well, they're delaying because they're scared of the blowback. That's one side. On the other hand, it also is an indication of the lack of impartiality of the judges. On the other hand, if we get it right away, then there are remedies that we can suggest or follow up on, because there are remedies under the Italian Constitution for a decision to be reviewed. Okay? So that is one thing. Now, the other thing is that there's a very strong connection with the Monster of Florence case with Giuliano Minini, and he has not had a lot of success when he sues people for defamation. And so therefore, and just going back a little bit further, it's that in the case of the Monster of Florence and the death of a doctor who he felt was involved in that, which is Narducci, then in the Narducci case, what happened was that there was a lot of political interference, and in the end he won a moral victory in that the Supreme Court ruled that he had gone and been his investigation had been interfered with, and they sent the case back. But due to the statute of limitations running out, then many people just escaped justice. They sent one particular case back, which was the lawyer Alberto Brizzioli, if I hope I pronounce it correctly, but he is now Raffaele Sollecito's lawyer in the defamation case against him and Andrew Gumbel. And so they sent that case back to the preliminary trial courts. And then they just threw that out altogether. So it's like you go through a lengthy process of defamation, and in the end, nothing happens. So that is the Italian system, unfortunately. It also, on the other hand, he was successful in his defamation trial against Mario Spezzi, who's One of the people who was tied in with Doug was Preston, and so that's why I'm a little bit reluctant to say what would happen with Amanda Knox in the up.
So it kind of seems 50-50 or...
50-50, I would say. More likely that it will just be delayed. There will be no resolution as such. And because it would be very odd that on the one hand they acquit her of a murder, but then they say, well, but on the other hand you defamed Menini, and therefore that's the case. So I'm sorry to say, but it really seems like Amanda Knox is deemed untouchable, and that is why.
But she did get convicted of the calumny, saying that right?
That's right.
Calumny,
which is the criminal defamation, and that was for Patrick Lumumba. And that was a different court, and it was upheld by the Supreme Court. So that's the case. But now that her ultimate murder charge has been removed, that's no longer hanging over her, then I think that they might feel, and again, this is just my personal opinion, as everything else that I'm saying today is just my own observation, and that is that they would find it very difficult because they are concerned about public opinion. I think that they might feel that, perhaps Prosecutor Menini is overreaching himself. And they might also say, well, even if she were convicted, then the Americans will never extradite her, so what's the point? Safe face, in other words.
Now, about Amanda and Raffaele, when they started this whole process, this whole legal saga, at first their defense was very cohesive, but it seemed right before the acquittal, and even now perhaps, they've separated ways. Their two camps seem to have separated. Is that what you've noticed? Do you think they're just separate from each other now?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Raffaele Solicito's camp was feeding us information, but selective information, trying to undermine her case. And it just really rubbed me the wrong way. I said, well, I didn't want to have anything about to do with it. And then in the end, we got a little bit of information, and it was all very selective. So there was a time when they weren't sure of the ultimate decision, right up to almost the last moment. Then Solicito really thought he would lose, and he tried to pin the blame on Amanda Knox. But they managed to get an acquittal guaranteed, and so they've papered over the cracks, and it's like, they never had a difference of opinion. But even back as early as July of last year, then he was separating himself quite openly and publicly.
Mm-hmm. Right, I remember that, and I remember the PR in the U.S. was, or in Seattle particularly, was trying to, censor that or interpret it differently. He only spoke in Italian, I noticed, too, so that it could be interpreted however way they wanted in English. So that's what I noticed that. But yeah, okay. So basically, you think, go ahead.
Please, yes. The friends of Amanda Knox were very angry, and they made all sorts of oblique threats to him.
They threaten a lot of people, right?
Oh, yes. Some of us a little bit more so than others. I'm sort of fortunate, actually, that I've never hidden my identity. And so everybody knows Matt from Atlan and Ergon are Nasir Ahmed. And so it sort of loses its sting a bit. But then they put a lot of effort into finding people's anonymous, the real people behind anonymous Twitter and Facebook identities. And then they go and call their employer. So not nice, whoever does that.
Right, right. Yeah, a lot of shenanigans. But hopefully, you know, I guess now it is pretty much winding down, but we'll see. After these next two trials, I guess that would really be it.
Well, this is what we have hope for. Okay, I think that the defamation trials are actually just like sideshows, and it's nice, but I don't want to give people the false hope that that is the case. And here's something that's a lot more I want to suggest another possibility, and it's something that I checked because it's just interesting how so many of us, we don't speak Italian, we are just bystanders in a way, but yet we've so educated ourselves in the Italian legal system. And it seems that there are options available. A civil suit could be filed against Amanda Knox in Italy. It can also be that the judges can request a review of this recent decision by the Council of Magistrates, which is the Supreme Court's ruling body. And it may be a moral victory. It could be saying, okay, that this decision was illegal, but I'm not too sure what the remedies might be. I know that it's possible to review and to say that this decision was illegal, but I don't know what further remedies are available. And so, in other words, it would be that there would be a record of finding which would always stand against Amanda Knox in the future and Raffaele Sollecito, because he is the other party in this, and it would be like O.J. Simpson. Yes, he was acquitted, but nobody believed that he was innocent.
Right, right. It is very similar to that O.J. case and Casey Anthony, another one. I forget what I was going to ask you now. I had one more question.
You were going to ask about Frank Schwartz?
Oh, yeah. We only have a couple of minutes left. But
sure. And whatever you want to ask.
I can talk about that another time, actually, because we only have a couple
sure.
of minutes left. So okay. Just to, you know, sum it up, what do you think Larry asked you about the next case? Any, you know, other anything that in particular or any thoughts about just in general this whole... I remember what I was going to ask you. You said that about punishment. Do you think Amanda Knox will... You know, is she being punished in the end, even though she's been acquitted? Because nobody believes that she's innocent, or very few.
I think that speaks to her psychology. To what extent is she aware of this, or and how many layers of denial has she surrounded herself? She certainly has surrounded herself with enablers who would reinforce that, oh, she's innocent, and she's come to believe her own hype. But I think on a deeper spiritual level, then, of course, you know what you did. And, yes, I believe that she suffers. And at this stage, and in spite of everything she has done, and in spite of everything that her followers have done in attacking the Kircher family, then I can only feel sorry and compassion for her.
Wow, yeah. Well, my sympathies go to the Kircher family.
First of all,
I don't know how they... All of this is just so long and drawn out and so public. And the online activities have been just out, you know, the attacking online.
First and foremost, but you see, we distanced ourselves in a way. We didn't want the... anything that we did to impact on the Kirchers. We sort of have kept our respectful distance. They're aware of our work, but they this accusation was made against them, and I really want to say this publicly, that they have never been involved in the ongoing debate. They have kept a very dignified distance from all of this. They have had no involvement in any form of PR. Yes, they have expressed their opinion, which they have every right to do so, but they have not been involved in social media or the internet in these activities like what we see on both sides of the debate.
Okay, well, we've run out of time. Nasir, thank you for being on True Crimes Podcast.
Thank you so much.
Okay,
have a good
take
day.
Care. Okay, bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.